Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
To the left hand side for Vieira, who'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel Keller, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
Listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, part of the 90 Min football family. Hope you're all good. Hope you're all well. That was a pretty quiet weekend, wasn't it? From an Arsenal point of view, I have to say I quite enjoyed the opportunity to recharge after what had been quite a difficult week. As you guys know, we'd spoken about it on the podcast already. Yeah, I kind of really needed this weekend to just sit back, relax a little bit, stick the barbecue on for the first time in 2024. It's mad to think, isn't it, that it's taken me until March to do it. Some people will say I'm mad for doing it in March and not waiting until the summer months. But hey, it's the Cypriot in me. I hope everyone's good. I hope everybody's well. We've got a lot to talk about because we've not recorded an episode for a few days now. I didn't feel the need to kind of force episodes over the weekend where obviously nothing Arsenal related was going on whatsoever. We're here now and we're going to round up all the news over the last few days. We're going to discuss some of those stories. We're going to get your thoughts on them as well. Make sure that you're interacting with us live in the comments if you are joining us now. If you are watching this back on YouTube a little bit later on, make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel and all the rest of it. If you're listening on audio, please do leave us a review. You know how much that helps. On today's show, we're going to round up all the latest news. As I say, we're going to talk the latest on Big Gabby and his injury scare. We're going to talk Thomas Partey. We're going to talk Julian Timber. We're going to talk Ben White. We're also going to talk a little bit about Nottingham Forest's points deduction, because I think that's relevant as a Premier League fan. So we're going to get into that a little bit as well. We're going to discuss some of the differences between their points deduction and the one that Everton were hit with as well. We're also going to take a load of your questions throughout the show, and we're going to dedicate a section solely to your questions towards the end of the program as well. Thanks for joining me on another edition of the Chronicles of Aguna. Let's get into it. You know what? I think we'll start with the Nottingham Forest stuff. The news broke yesterday that Nottingham Forest have been deducted 4 points, and lots of people have been asking the question, well, what's the difference between what Nottingham Forest have done and what Everton have done? Actually, Nottingham Forest have breached the rules by more in terms of the monetary value. So why is it that they've got a smaller points deduction, which of course they have the right to appeal? But I mean, before we get into all of that stuff, I just think it's so, so messy handing out points deductions like what, 10, 12 weeks before the end of the season. I just think the way it impacts the league, the way it impacts things, I don't know if I like that, but equally, you don't want clubs to get away with breaching the rules to the point where, you know, they're able to survive as a result of it. And then maybe that has a knock-on effect on what they're then able to build, and that then makes it difficult for some of the other clubs to reestablish themselves. I don't know. It's a really, really complex thing and a real big mess, in my opinion. I know that you can't have one rule for some and one rule for others, but it almost feels like if we were talking about a team that was sitting eighth, ninth in the table, I wouldn't feel so strongly about this, and I wouldn't make as much of an argument about it being unfair and, you know, the sort of negative impact I believe that it has on the Premier League to dish out that kind of punishment now, because those clubs could swallow the points deduction and still be in a position where they're safe. Nottingham Forest have been right in the thick of the relegation battle. And that's why I think this is so significant. And that's why I think this is really going to ruffle some feathers. If we take a look at the league table now, and I'll just bring it up on my screen in front of me, Nottingham Forest, as a result of this, drop down into the relegation zone, which means that Luton Town get a foot up and they are now in 17th place. Only a point separates the two sides. Of course, they played out a draw at the weekend. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how this sits with me. Just to go back to the points deduction thing and why Everton's points deduction was different, less. I'm going to bring up something that Martin Ziegler put out yesterday when he was explaining the situation. Now, according to Martin Ziegler, who's far more educated on these matters than I am, he says that both of these were deemed as significant breaches, both amounts of money. So the amount of money that Everton crossed the line by and the result that Nottingham Forest crossed the line by, or the amount Nottingham Forest crossed the line by, I beg your pardon. Both of those amounts, despite being different, fall into the category of a significant breach. And to kind of put it into layman's terms, he has published some of the written reasons, but to put it into layman's terms, it's understood that Everton was seen to have provided incorrect information. And that's the difference in the eyes of those taking the decision in the two cases, which is why Nottingham Forest were handed a points deduction, but a lesser points deduction. You know, Everton had theirs reduced, obviously, by 4 points. And, you know, that has obviously given them a little bit of breathing space. They're now 4 points clear of the drop zone, but they do have a game in hand over Burnley, Nottingham Forest and Luton and Brentford, who are just a point in front of them. So Everton, you feel like, are probably in a safe position because of the fact that they've had some of their points back. That might be the case with Nottingham Forest as well. You know, they might get some of the points back. I don't know. I don't understand the ins and outs of this enough to really do like a deep dive and analysis. But what I would say is this: to be handing teams points and then taking points away in the business end of the season with less than 10 games to go, it's impossible for it not to have a massive impact, not just in terms of the points, but psychologically on a lot of these teams. And I don't know what the solution is, and I don't know what I would have done in the position of the authorities, but this just doesn't sit right with me. It feels odd, it feels out of sorts, and it feels like it's just opening a can of worms. And the controversy that's going to surround a relegation for Nottingham Forest, for example, now having had those points taken away at this stage in the season, you know, Everton having points handed back makes it probably feel worse for Nottingham Forest. It's a really, really difficult situation. But I just wanted to highlight that because I think it's a really big story in the context of the Premier League. Let me take some of your thoughts and questions from the live chat on this and say a few hellos, and then we'll move into the Arsenal stuff. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna Pod. Okay, let's say a few hellos because there's plenty of you joining us. We've got Mario, we've got Tom, we've got Derek, we've got Matt joining us from Chicago. Peter's with us, Craig is with us, Temmie is with us, Ray Beam. The Preacher's just signed up as a member. Thank you so much. I've got a bit of an update on that stuff for you that I'm going to roll out a little bit later on in the week. Basically, I'll save it and we'll go into it in a lot more detail. Okay, what else have we got in the live chat? Zed Tom says, to be fair, it really shouldn't be possible for any club to sign the absolutely insane number of players that Forest bought these past two seasons. How a promoted team can afford to add 20 to 25 plus players. I mean, they let a lot go as well, and I think that sometimes goes under the radar. But I also agree that when you saw Nottingham Forest do the business that they did and you saw how many players they managed to bring in the door, and not cheap players. You know, I talk about the fact that they lost a lot of players. They did lose a lot of players on free transfers, loans expiring, all of that stuff. They did go and spend a lot of money. And for me, knowing how long Nottingham Forest have been outside of the Premier League and knowing what I know about Evangelos Marinakis. I looked at it and I thought, and I'll leave it at that, shall I? But look, it's come to light that they've obviously breached the rules. There's a lot of chat about them maybe selling a player and deciding actually not to do it at that particular time. I think it was Brennan Johnson that was discussed. And had they allowed that deal to go through at that point, then maybe their finances would have been in order, et cetera, et cetera. The bottom line is they've broken the rules. And you break the rules, you're going to get punished. And once the Premier League punished Everton in the way that they did, they had to follow through with Nottingham Forest. And they will probably have to follow through with other clubs. We're hearing about Leicester City, potentially, if they do come up from the Championship, walking straight into a punishment because of what they've done in the past. And that could, you know, leave them in a difficult position, returning back to the Premier League, which is tough enough as it is. Interesting. I don't really know how this is going to end. I just know that there's going to be controversy either way. And I think that although I'm all for the PSR rules, I really am. And I'm all for the punishments being dished out when those rules have been breached. I think we need to have clearer guidelines around this. And I think there needs to be guidelines with regards to timing, because I think not only does it have an impact on the table, but psychologically. I mean, if you're Luton, you've just been given a massive boost, and that boost could be enough to kind of galvanize you and get you going in the charge for survival. If you're Nottingham Forest, you're probably feeling really deflated at the moment. Now, obviously, they're only a point behind and they shouldn't switch off or give up on the possibility of surviving. But you get what I'm saying. It's not just the value that this has on the points board. It is psychologically really, really testing and challenging. And if you then get given points back, then you're then kicking the other team in the stomach that were involved. In this case, it will be Luton Town. And you're maybe damaging their hopes, and they've got nothing to do with this. They haven't breached anymore. So it's just all a big old mess, isn't it? Anyway, lots of you asking, what about Man City? What about Man City? What about Man City? Now, I understand people's frustration around this. I feel frustrated about this. I feel like the minute the Premier League came out and made those charges public, then the kind of clock started ticking, didn't it, with regards to how long it was going to take them to come to some form of conclusion on this. I've said this a million and one times. I don't know the ins and outs of Manchester City's finances. I couldn't sit here, hand on my heart, and say they're cheats or they did this or they did that, because I don't know. That's the truth of it. Equally, I can't say that they're innocent. So I think a lot of people are in my position at the moment where you're looking at it and you're going, well, I just want some form of conclusion. The problem is that when you come into the public eye with 115 charges against you, if you're cleared of all of them and you're found not guilty of all of them, then people are going to find that quite difficult to believe. And then you're going to get the knock-on effect, which is going to be more controversy, more disdain towards Manchester City, et cetera, et cetera. That case has been rumbling on for an age. And I know we've got a kind of provisional trial date set, but this thing really, really does need to be resolved. And the fact that all of these other cases are being brought forward and resolved and then dealt with and punishments are being administered and all the rest of it in a much shorter period of time. And I understand that the complexity of the cases is very different. It just adds to the frustration around the Manchester City issue. So, yeah, I completely agree with people who are saying that it's incredibly frustrating. And I think Manchester City fans will probably be as frustrated as anybody, because everything they're doing at the moment and achieving, it feels like it's kind of tarnished in the eyes of everybody else. I know they won't care because they'll enjoy it still and whatever, but I wouldn't want that hanging over me. Mark Jerome says, doesn't this profit and sustainability stuff prevent other clubs from closing the gap to the top teams who've already built their squads and only need to add the odd player each transfer window? Yeah, I mean, but I don't have an issue with the idea and the concept of bigger clubs being able to spend more money. Like, they generate revenue at a higher rate than some of the other clubs. So, like, it's perfectly normal, in my opinion, that Arsenal, who generate loads of money, you know, should be able to spend more than Bournemouth. Like, I don't think that's a problem. I think the size of the club should dictate that. And I know we've got clubs that are historically much bigger, and that gives them a sort of a foot up against everybody else. But you can build up the size of the club by being successful within your means. And I think what we've seen, and why the Premier League has become such an attractive league to so many, is rich ownership coming in from all different parts of the world, pumping money in, leveling that playing field a little bit. And then as a result of that, you've seen some other forces emerge: Chelsea, Manchester City, just to name a few. And that's allowed them to have sustained periods of success, upon which they've built bigger fan bases, etc., etc. And they've grown as football clubs as a result of it. I know what you're saying, because if we go down this route, that won't be able to happen in the way that Chelsea and Manchester City have done it. I would argue that Chelsea and Manchester City emerging the way they did is probably not the healthiest thing for football. Now, if it were my club, I'd absolutely love it and I'd lap it up. And I'm not saying for a second that those supporters shouldn't enjoy it or anything like that. But I think that's where football started to go wrong. That's where football decided to go down another path. And I'm not sure that we're in a better place for that. You know, I don't know. That's just my personal opinion. And I know people would disagree with that, and that's absolutely fine. There's a lot of questions coming through. What I'm going to do is I'm going to save some of them, and I'm going to come back to them a little bit later on in the show, because we've got a few news stories to get through. Just a quick reminder, if you haven't done so already, please do leave a like on the video. Subscribe to the channel if you're brand spanking new. If you're watching us, that is, if you're listening on audio, please do leave us a review. If you're watching us live on X right now, then please give us a repost and a like. It really, really does help. Okay, let's take a short pause, and when we return, we'll get into some of those Arsenal-related news stories. Okay, let's begin with the man, the myth, the legend. Cedric Suarez is going to be leaving Arsenal as a free agent this summer, according to reports. Look, Arsenal have tried to move Cedric on a number of occasions. We know that, and it's just not happened. Probably because he's on a pretty good wage at Arsenal. He signed that four-year contract with the Gunners when he joined. And I have to say, even at the time, I was like, okay, we need a fullback. We need someone to plug a hole. Cedric Suarez had a kind of decent enough career up until that point. Free transfer. I thought, no-brainer. And then I saw that it was a four-year contract. And I thought, what on earth are we doing? I remember saying at the time that the problem is that when you sign players as free agents, it gives them more room to negotiate other things. So a transfer fee is not going to be exchanged between two football clubs. Therefore, the player has more power and more wiggle room to try and negotiate preferential terms and vaster amounts of money for themselves. And that's what Cedric Suarez has done. You know, and, you know, fair play to him. I think you'd have done it. I think I'd have done it. You know, it's just business, isn't it? Like, what he's done is he's gone and he said, I know, I'm going to, you know, dig my heels in over the term of the contract, seeing as they're not paying a transfer fee. And Arsenal at the time were willing to do that. And there it was, four-year contract for Cedric Suarez. And yeah, we've been stuck with him ever since, is the truth. I think he's a good professional. I think he's obviously someone that Arsenal quite like in terms of his personality and character. If he wasn't, they would have terminated his contract like they've done with so many other players. They obviously didn't feel there was a desperate need to get him out the door. He's not a disruptor or anything like that. But yeah, obviously his time at Arsenal is due to come to an end. We tried to sell him in January. We couldn't do a deal. Tried to sell him last summer. We couldn't do a deal. And so Cedric Suarez is going to leave the club at the end of the campaign. And continue at the moment to be someone who, as harsh as this sounds, makes up the numbers in training and is a part of the squad in terms of his personality. And we know that Arteta's not completely against doing that kind of thing. We know that Rob Holding had a bit of a role like that at points during his Arsenal career as well. But Cedric Suarez's time at Arsenal looks as though it's finally coming to an end, and that's all going to come to a head in the summer. If you wondered why I just got caught kind of like looking to my right and I beg your pardon, maybe you saw a bit of a shocked face, it's because my garden umbrella, which was standing up against my fence, has just swung down and smashed into the ground in front of the man cave. It's probably broken, no, my luck. But anyway, I'll swiftly put it in the shed, I think, so that the wife doesn't see it. Anyway, let's move on. We're going to talk Reece Nelson right after this. Reece Nelson is the subject of interest from Brighton and Hove Albion, according to reports. He's a player that they have admired, actually, for quite a while. The reason, though, that Brighton are going to hold fire on this, because I'm sure in an ideal world, they'd maybe like to get ahead of the game in terms of trying to negotiate something for him ahead of the summer. I actually think that despite what people say about Reece Nelson, there'll be quite a bit of interest in him in the summer. The issue is that does the price point that maybe some of those clubs interested have in mind look anything like the price point that maybe Arsenal as a football club will have in mind for the winger? I think he's come on at times and looked bright. I don't think he's an Arsenal winger in terms of I don't think he's a starter. And I do think if we want to compete at the very, very highest levels, we're going to have to upgrade on him, even just in terms of the squad. I really, really do believe that. But that's not to say that he can't go on and have a good career somewhere else. I think he's very talented. And we've never seen Reece Nelson have any rhythm, any consistency in terms of being selected week in, week out. And when we have in the past, he's actually done quite well at other clubs on loan. So I think Reece Nelson's an interesting one. And I think if I were a sort of mid to lower level Premier League club, I'd probably take a bit of a gamble and a bit of a punt on Reece Nelson. Brighton are the club that's been mentioned. But according to these reports, the reason that could be up in the air, and perhaps the reason why, you know, to our knowledge, no discussions have taken place already with a view to a summer move, is because of Roberto De Zerbi's future. Now, it's understood that a lot of the appreciation that Brighton have for Reece Nelson stems from Roberto De Zerbi, who thinks he could be a really valid and useful addition to the group. The problem is that we don't know if Roberto De Zerbi is going to be at Brighton next season. He's been heavily linked with the Liverpool job. He's been named among a list of candidates that Liverpool are supposedly looking at. And as a result of that, you know, Brighton will probably want to press pause on planning for the summer until they know for certain who's going to be in charge. I know the model at Brighton doesn't work like that, where it's manager says everything, but manager has an input. All good managers have an input. And I don't buy into this sort of modern day football nonsense whereby we're talking about clubs that go and recruit players without even running it by a manager. I think that clubs can have the final say, and I think sporting directors have a big influence, and that's why it's so handy to have a sporting director that's on the same page as your manager or head coach. But I don't think you can have a healthy environment whereby a manager just gets given players and is told, yep, extract the maximum from this guy, because actually we've invested quite a bit of money. I think that's been the problem at Chelsea for a number of years. Graham Potter got a load of players that he really didn't want. Pochettino got a number of players that he didn't really want, and he's taken him a lot of time to figure out what's what and who's who. And even still, you could argue that they're nowhere near being where they should be. So I just don't think that dynamic works at any level, at any club. So although people say, well, Brighton work with a sporting director, et cetera, et cetera, Roberto De Zerbi's role in this is going to be important either way. Okay, let's talk international break, because a number of our players were called up for international duty. Some were not called up and some have decided to stay back. We'll get into all of that right after. Okay, let's begin with Arsenal's Ghanaian midfielder Thomas Partey, who is slowly working his way back towards full fitness. He's not joined up with Ghana this time around, and that's because they recognise, as well as Arsenal Football Club, that, you know, he is not in a position yet to be playing regularly. And although the kind of games are running out, I still believe that Thomas Partey could have a significant impact on how our season finishes and how our season ends. So it's important that we protect him. It's important that he's managed really, really carefully in terms of his recovery. We've had setbacks with Thomas Partey before. And when you get to the international breaks, you're always sitting there going, why, oh, why, oh, why? And I understand it, right? To Ghana, he's a really, really important player. He should be. He's a top, top talent. If you're an international manager, your job is to win football matches for your nation. Why would you care about what that means for Mikel Arteta or Arsenal Football Club? You wouldn't. You have to manage the relationship with the club to a certain point and to a certain degree. But that's not your priority, is it? Ghana, thankfully, have been really, really good in this. And they've shown some common sense and they've realized that actually it's best for all parties if Thomas Partey is allowed to recover. Some have said to me over the last sort of 24 hours, actually, I'd have kind of preferred that Thomas Partey went because obviously he's not played any football recently. He's been coming on as a sub late on in games. You know, he came on really, really late a couple of weeks ago. He didn't come on in the Porto game because maybe it was just too intense. And the way that panned out made that sort of not possible. But the point I'm trying to make here is that, you know, you need to apply common sense in situations like this. And thankfully, all parties seem to be aligned with this. And as a result, Thomas Partey has stayed back. Gabriel Jesus is another one who would have been called up by Brazil, but hasn't been because, again, there's a mutual agreement between the two parties, Arsenal Football Club and the Brazilian Federation, that actually he's not fit enough to go over and play pointless, meaningless friendlies either. And Brazil, of course, have the Copa America this year and will want to make sure that he is recovered in time for that as well. Obviously, we know about the Ben White stuff. You know, England wanted to call him up, but again, Ben White refused to answer the call. He's just not interested. And we discussed that on a recent episode. Martinelli's out injured. Obviously, England are due to play Brazil during this international break. So where we might have been looking at three or four Arsenal players being involved, three, I think, we're not now. We're not going to see any, which I'm actually absolutely fine with. And the reason we're not going to see any is because Gabriel, big Gabby, Gabby Magalhaes, has pulled out of the squad. When I read this news yesterday, my heart sank. Let's get into it right after this. So big Gabby has pulled out of the Brazilian squad with an injury. When I read this, my heart dropped. I thought, what the hell has gone on here? This is a really, really important player to us. When Gabriel first came into Arsenal, I thought he's got all the raw attributes, physical, powerful, looks like he's going to fit in the Premier League just fine. But there was a rashness, there was an immaturity to Gabriel. But over time, we've seen him develop into, in my opinion, one of the best centre-backs in world football. I think on current form, he's the best centre-back in the Premier League. Some people will say no, they'll say Virgil van Dijk and they'll point to others. For me, it's Gabriel. In terms of the way he's performing on an individual level, all the talk is about Saliba all the time. All the flowers get handed out to William Saliba on a weekly basis, and rightly so, because he's a wonderful player too. But Gabby is huge for me. So important to this team. So important to any success that we might go on to enjoy between now and the end of the season. So when I read he's pulled out of the squad, I was really concerned. And I was really, really worried. Now, Arsenal, it seems, have been briefing people, you know, along the lines of calm, relax, chill out. This isn't a major issue. This is something that's been done as a precaution to make sure that Gabriel doesn't aggravate a sort of ongoing problem that he has. Now, according to ESPN Brazil, the injury is some inflammation to his Achilles tendon. I'm just checking that up. Yeah, that's what they're saying is the issue. Nobody's confirmed that. Nobody from Arsenal's end has come out and said that. As I say, they seem to be briefing people along the lines of calm down, relax. He should be fine. There's plenty of time before the Manchester City game. But we need him for that game. We need Gabriel to be in the heart of that defence alongside William Saliba. And what a blow it would be if he were to become unavailable. Hopefully, all this chat of it being a precaution is the truth. And hopefully we have him available for that game. But this is not the kind of thing I want to be sort of having to process in my mind and sort of deal with in my mind over the course of the next, what, 2 weeks or so, because this is just, this is not good. Big, big player, really, really important to us. Fingers crossed, it is just Arsenal and Brazil being really, really careful with a player who's become really important for the national team, but is massively, massively important for Mikel Arteta's Arsenal. On the wider subject, though, of international breaks and you know, this fear that comes about when you have to let players go off to play meaningless, pointless friendlies at this point in the season, why do we do this? Like, why do we put ourselves through this? Like, people say, oh, it's a really complex issue because of the international tournaments and the qualification campaigns and all that. I think this is a bloody easy one to resolve. A really, really easy one to resolve. Play club football this weekend. Scrap all the international breaks in which there are friendlies. I haven't got a problem with competitive international football. It's not my preferred thing. It's not my number one, but I respect it. So I'm fine with us having the odd international break to accommodate that. The pointless friendly stuff, just bin them. Bin the pointless friendlies, right? At least for now, play the season through, end the season a little bit earlier as a result of not having to take those breaks, and then play a few friendlies before you go into a tournament. Wouldn't that make more sense anyway? Like, if I'm Gareth Southgate, wouldn't I rather that my friendlies come in the build-up to the tournament so I can have a real good look at players in their current form, in their form ahead of the tournament, and I can try things tactically that are going to sink in over the course of the next 2 weeks and then go to the tournament? Wouldn't that make more sense than having an international break in the middle of March and then watching those players all go back to their clubs and having to play the rest of March, April and May at a really high competitive level? There's risks to me as well with regards to players being injured. It just doesn't make any sense. There you go. I fixed it for you. Nice and easy. Okay, we've got one more story to touch on, but I do want to get some of you guys' thoughts and comments from the live chat with regards to some of the things we've been talking about already. Just going back to the whole points, deductions and punishments and all of that stuff. Dave Atkinson says, Harry, if you don't want a punishment, don't break the rules. And if Arsenal do it, we should be punished. And the only way it will ever mean anything is by deducting points. I don't disagree, mate. I don't disagree. As I said a little bit earlier on, I think you have to enforce this stuff and you have to hand out deductions when people breach. Otherwise, what is the point? And the sanctions have to be quite harsh, because there will be teams that will look at a player and say, let's say, for example, I'm Nottingham Forest. Let's just use Nottingham Forest as an example. Okay, let's say there is a player available to Nottingham Forest that they really, really want. Okay, they really, really want him, but they think that bringing him in could take them over the line when it comes to profit and sustainability rules. If they know that the punishment that's coming their way is probably going to be a little bit meaningless, i.e., maybe a fine or a small points deduction, let's say 3 points for the sake of the argument, they might look at that player and go, I'll take that 3 point deduction, because I believe X player to me over the course of the season is going to earn me 6 or 9 points. So actually I'm still in the positive and it's still worth me doing that deal. So I think that these things do have to be enforced and these things do have to be quite severe with regards to what the punishments are. But yeah, you know, I agree with you. If Arsenal are found to breach the PSR rules, you're not going to get me sitting here going, this is a disgrace. Other teams have had to deal with it and have had to be punished. I would just hope that we're smarter than that and that we, you know, have our house in order. But that requires a maturity from some of the fans as well, who, you know, a large portion of go into every transfer window going, why haven't we bought this? Why haven't we bought that? We knew in January that Arsenal couldn't spend much money. We knew that. Yet throughout January, all we heard was, why haven't Arsenal gone and bought a striker? Why haven't Arsenal done this? Why haven't Arsenal done that? So whilst I agree that you should stick to the rules and punishments should be handed out to those that don't, and quite severe punishments in order to act as a bit of a deterrent, it also requires the fans, in my opinion, to grow up a little bit, generally speaking, and be mature about the situations that we find ourselves in. There's no point in sitting on a podcast every day talking about the need for a striker when we can't possibly sign one because of the PSR rules that we're talking about. Ray Beam says, seems like the Premier League is ready at hand, to hand out punishments to low-hanging fruit. But the big guys seem to continue with impunity. What happens to these results if City are sanctioned? Mate, it's such a good point. It does feel like it's easier to punish those clubs. And that's why we're seeing those clubs punished. And maybe, you know, we're seeing the Premier League struggling to kind of make it stick when it comes to Manchester, to Manchester City. Yeah. Okay. Let's dive back into our stories and we'll come back to the comments in just a second. Here we go. Christoph says, grow up, mature. Harry, you're going too far now, mate. It's true. It's never going to happen, is it? It's never going to happen. Right, let's take that short pause. Then we'll do our final story, and then we'll take some of your questions for the remainder of the pod. You're listening to the Chronicles of Acuna.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Okay, the final story I want to discuss today is a transfer link. And I know that we're in March, and I know that I've just been talking about people calming down with transfers. But I thought this was a really, really interesting link, and one that there's quite a bit of discussion to be had around. And that is the link to Bayern Munich's Joshua Kimmich. Now, of course, we face Bayern Munich in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Florian Plettenberg has reported that Joshua Kimmich could be leaving Bayern this summer. He's got 1 year to go on his contract. And that Arsenal are among the clubs that are said to be interested. Now, this is a player that for quite some time I've really, really rated. I think technically, he's really, really gifted. Good set piece taker. I think he's very, very intelligent as a footballer. And I think you can see that in the way that he's been able to adapt from different positions. He's played at right back quite a bit. He's played in defensive midfield quite a bit. Started his sort of youth career with Stuttgart, is where I kind of remember him from. And then he went over to RB Leipzig, I think on loan, before eventually joining Bayern Munich from Stuttgart back in 2015 for about €8.5 million at the time. He's a player that I think has got a lot of really strong qualities, but has probably got a little bit lost in between a couple of positions. And the reason I look at this and I don't say, nope, forget it, waste of time, despite a couple of things. So despite the fact that A, he's 29 years old, and B, you know, he doesn't really have a clear position anymore because he's either a right back who's inverting or he's a defensive midfielder, and he's kind of become a little bit of a hybrid in that area of the pitch, is because we've seen Mikel Arteta pick up his sort, shall we say, before. You think about Kai Havertz and you think about where we were all at with him, player that people looked at and went, well, he's clearly quite talented, but actually, you know, maybe he struggles to kind of fall into any one particular box. Like as a centre forward, he's probably not the most natural fit. But then we brought him in as a midfielder maybe, and people went, well, he's not a midfielder either. And he's kind of like lost in between a few areas. But if the team is set up right and you can really kind of home in on the skills that, you know, you believe he has, you can get the best out of him. And we've seen Mikel Arteta do this with a few players. Havertz, we're reaping the rewards of that deal at this moment in time. And if you think back to Granit Xhaka, who had a very strong skill set, but maybe wasn't playing in a position that necessarily suited that, Mikel Arteta recognized it quite quickly and moved him into a more advanced area. And as a result of that, he improved and the Arsenal improved as well. So I look at Kimmich and I think the first thing is age. 29 years old, I think, would Arsenal go out and bring in a 29-year-old? Well, he's not going to cost a fortune because you know, he's got 1 year to go on his contract with Bayern. And we know that the Premier League clubs, even with the PSR stuff, are probably in a stronger financial position than anybody else in the world. So money shouldn't really be an issue. But as for the age thing, Mikel Arteta has not been afraid to go in and bring in slightly older players if he thinks that they're going to bring the right qualities to the group, both on and off the pitch. Jorginho is a really, really good example of that. So I won't rule it out on the basis of his age alone. The positional stuff we've already talked about, you know, he can play in a multitude of positions, and I think that would really, really help. And maybe this is one that's kind of dependent on what happens with Jorginho. You know, is he going to stay? Is he going to sign a contract extension? We hear that Arsenal have offered that to him. We hear that talks and discussions have taken place, but we don't know where that's going to lead, where that's going to end. Jorginho might get a 2-3 year contract offer from someone in Italy and think, you know what, I want to go back home, and yeah, off I go. You just don't know. I'm not saying that this is one that you should get carried away with, but I am saying that Joshua Kimmich is a really talented player with a lot of qualities that maybe you're not seeing at Bayern right now, but that you could see in a more functioning side, in a better setup side. And look, at the end of the day, I've got to the point with players where if Mikel Arteta likes him, I like him. And if he's going to bring him in, I'm going to go into it with an open mind, and then I'll make my judgment sort of further down the line. Not saying this is going to happen, but I thought this was worth mentioning. Another player that's been linked is Daniel Malen as well, who could be set to leave Borussia Dortmund. His former Arsenal man, Daniel Malen. I'll just bring up his profile on my screen so I can make sure that I'm giving you the correct information on him. Hold on a second. There is Daniel Malen, 25 years old now. Dutch international, of course. He's got 11 goals and 3 assists in 23 Bundesliga appearances this season. He's also got a goal in the Champions League. Spent some time with Arsenal's under-18s, under-23s before joining PSV back in August 2017. He's developed quite well. Would Arsenal go out there and bring him back? I don't know. Obviously, he plays predominantly on the right flank, so could he be that kind of upgrade to Saka's replacement that I was maybe mentioning we need? I don't know, possibly, potentially. But again, Dortmund notoriously very good sellers, so you're probably not going to get him on the cheap. So you'd have to think about that. But some Bundesliga-based players being linked with Arsenal at the moment. And yeah, I just found these two links quite interesting, although I would advise caution and say don't get carried away. It is March and maybe we shouldn't be talking transfers at all. But hey, it's the international break. So what else are we going to do? Right. Let's take a short pause and then we'll take some of your questions. Okay. Alistair Ben says, Kimmich would be a very good signing, not just experienced, but has leadership and of course qualities he can play. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing, right? I think that Joshua Kimmich is clearly a very good footballer who's won it all, who's experienced it all. I've always been so impressed with him whenever I've sat down and watched Bundesliga football or even in the Champions League. He's a Champions League winner, that you'd be adding another load of experience. He's an eight-time German champion. He's won the Club World Cup. He's won the UEFA Super Cup, six-time German Super Cup winner, three-time German Cup winner, and he's also won the Confederations Cup as well with Germany. He's got load of caps for his national team. He's not a million miles off of 100 caps. Really, really good player. And I know that people will say, well, I prefer someone younger and I prefer someone that is a lot more long-term. I agree, but you need to have balance in a squad. And I think that Jorginho is a perfect example of someone who wasn't in the age bracket that we'd have been looking for ideally, but would bring a number of qualities that Mikel Arteta valued and could come in as a kind of plug and play when you needed him. And I think Kimmich would be coming in with that in mind if Arsenal were to do this deal. It wouldn't be Joshua Kimmich's coming in and walks straight into our midfield and starting 11. It would be he's versatile, which is something that Arteta's really, really big on. He's experienced. He's got the right temperament. He's got the right skill set. He can be someone that helps and supports this team as it continues to grow. People always used to say, you never win anything with kids. You can win stuff with kids, but you need to have experienced heads in and around them. And Joshua Kimmich is someone that would certainly fall into that category for me. Okay, let's take some more of your thoughts and more of your questions. I favorited a couple from earlier on. Hassan Ali asked, do you believe that the current amount of games requires teams to have two teams on rotation of the same quality? Perhaps that's where we need to reinforce strong bench of equal quality. I don't know that you can ever develop that kind of continuity and those relationships to the level that you'd like if you're constantly rotating. I think there will be certain elements of your team that need to be ever-present. Like for Arsenal, it's Saliba and Gabriel at centre-back. It's Declan Rice in the midfield. It's Bukayo Saka on the right. And maybe you can rotate a little bit around those players and, you know, make it work a lot of the time. But I like the idea of having a settled team. I think you need quality and depth. We've discussed this before, and I think it's clear that that's the way you have to be set up if you want to be successful, just because of the demands. Personally, I think the demands are too much. I mean, I've said this before. I would change the EFL/Carabao Cup. I would say only those not participating in Europe get to play in it. You know, I think that's the way to do that and reduce the number of games. I think when it comes to the FA Cup, I'd probably change the way that works as well. I would maybe say that Premier League teams that come in the third round all need to be drawn away from home against, you know, whoever it is they're going to... I don't know. There's a lot of ideas that like sort of run through my mind about how you do this and how you make the cups work better and how you kind of remove the burden of, you know, the number of competitions that we have to play in. I think the other thing as well is the TV stuff dictates everything, and that's a problem. Like I see it in Italy where, you know, they will say, well, Juve, for example, are playing in Europe. I know they're not now, but just as an example, they're playing in Europe on Tuesday. So rather than them playing on Sunday night because we want to televise that game, let's move their game to the Friday. Let them play on the Friday. So they've got a bit more of a gap between the two games, and that strengthens our sides in Europe. That then helps our coefficient, which then shines a brighter and more complementary light on our league and our football generally. So I think there's loads of stuff you can do to go as far as having two teams that rotate. Not for me, but, you know, you can make a strong case for that given the number of games we're asking and expecting people to play. Temi Ola, because we were talking about Roberto De Zerbi earlier on, has asked this question, which I think is an interesting one. Not Arsenal related, but we'll tackle it anyway. Thoughts on Brighton not playing well compared with last season? Is it because they sold their best players, or is De Zerbi overrated? I think De Zerbi's a fantastic coach. I wouldn't sit here and say that he's overrated. I think that Brighton obviously set a really, really high bar last season, and they were never going to be able to live up to it, especially with European football thrown in the mix as well. They've had a lot of injuries too. I think all of that stuff is a factor here and is part of the reason why Brighton are where they are. I look at the Premier League table, right? And I think, you know, Brighton in eighth is still bloody marvellous for a club of that size. I remember when Brighton were on the brink of extinction. I remember when they were playing at the Withdean Stadium, which was like an athletics ground that they had to kind of move into because they had no money, and it was an awful place to play and watch football. And they've gone on this incredible journey as a football club where they've stabilised themselves as a Premier League side. They built the Amex. And if you'd have asked the ownership of Brighton 20 years ago, 10 years ago, even maybe even 5 years ago, if they'd be happy with or if they'd taken eighth place finish in the Premier League, which is where they're currently sitting, they'd have bitten your hand off. So I think some of the criticism that Brighton get is maybe a little bit over the top. I understand that the higher you set the standard, you know, the greater risk you run of almost being a victim of your own success. But I really do believe that Brighton are in a great place, and Roberto De Zerbi's been right at the heart of that. He's not the only factor, because I think it's a really well-run football club, but you know, he's been brilliant. He's been brilliant for them. BX Gunner says, Harry, how thrilling would it be to win the league at Old Trafford after so long? Oh, it'd be amazing, wouldn't it? But I'm not even going to think about that at this stage, because there's so much football to be played. And, you know, watching them against Liverpool the other day, that probably want to. I don't know. Actually, I don't know who United would want to win the league. out of us, City and Liverpool, I actually feel like we'd probably be, you know, that rivalry between us and them isn't what it was. I know there's still something there, but I think they'd probably pick us to win the league over Man City and Liverpool. So yeah, interesting. Alistair says, Kimmich is definitely an Arteta type player. He plays in more than one position. Signing him would be good if Arsenal have maybe a youngster they think is coming through, but perhaps needs a little more time. Yeah, as an addition to the squad, I think he'd be, really good. Junior Gunner says, if we had last season's run in this season, would you be confident we could win the league? I'd be more confident than I am. Yeah, I think. Architoothis, I never know how to say this, says, a 29-year-old midfielder with Partey also on his last legs. No, thanks. We need someone about 24 to 26 with presence in midfield. I mean, I get where you're coming from, but I just don't think it's always as easy as that. I think you do need that experience. I think you do need that know-how. I think we've got that from a couple of senior players within our group. I know we've tended to target younger players with relatively a lot of experience in comparison to some of their peers in terms of their age. But, you know, I'm talking about Kimmich as a Jorginho type signing. I'm talking about going and testing the waters and trying to get him for 10, 15 million euros and bringing him in and saying, you are part of the rotation, you are part of the group. Like Jorginho, you'll have very specific roles and jobs. Not build my team around him. That's not what I'm saying. So just to be clear on that. Okay, I'm going to take one more, I think, before I sign out. Mohammed says, do you agree with me that achieving some big things this season relies on having all of our players during April and May? Because our backup are not at the level and we cannot afford injuries. Yeah, I think you need a bit of luck in the running of a title charge. I really do. And because of that, you know, I'm sitting here with my fingers and my toes crossed and everything that's possible to cross, hoping that we, you know, that we get there, that we get to the end of the campaign with everybody fit, with everybody hitting form at the right time, and that we will have enough to get over the line in one of the two major competitions. That's my hope. But I also have watched football and covered football long enough to know that things rarely work out like that. So we're probably going to have to overcome some adversity along the way. But hey, it is what it is. Okay, guys, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so, so much for joining me. As always, it is so, so appreciated. If you're watching us on X, thank you. We've had a load of you tuning in from there. Please do like the post, repost it as well, if you haven't done so already. If you're listening on audio, please do leave us a review. If you're watching on YouTube, please smash the like button and subscribe to the channel. It really, really does help. We'll be back with more of the Chronicles of Aguna very, very soon. We're in a bit of a lull at the moment. We're in the break. I don't know if there's going to be enough news to discuss every single day. So, you know, we might do one day on, one day off, depending on what breaks, what happens. But yeah, we'll keep you posted on everything Arsenal. And we'll have conversations wherever possible. Thank you so, so much for joining me. I'll catch you all soon. Until the next one, take care of yourselves. Goodbye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.